Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to another episode of Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm chilly. It's a little chilly out today.
It is. It is a little chilly. We actually had the heat on earlier, but it makes so much noise. And then it got too hot.
Yes, you can't have it too hot. You like a nice, you know,
like a chill.
Like a nice, yeah. Icy chill in this house.
Yes. Are you, we're full swing, you know, December.
In this holiday season.
Yeah. Are you prepped?
No, I'm not on Truvada.
That's a nice thing to admit.
Yeah, I mean,
no BB for you.
No BB for me. It's my choice. But be the generation, you know.
Yes. Hashtag.
Hashtag be the generation. It is. Never mind.
Have you put up a holiday bush?
I have not put up any holiday bush. I have purchased various holiday cards to give people from Etsy, though.
Oh, nice. So those should come in February.
Yeah, well, there is a set of cards that I bought from an artist in Mexico City that are not going to come until December 31st, apparently.
Oh.
But we'll see. I don't know. Maybe they'll ship sooner. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't rightly know. But yeah, so there's that, and this your home is decked out in all spooky finery.
We've got a few things,
the most part, yes.
Yeah, there's a few more things I want to do.
This is Halloween. Your Nightmare Before Christmas village is
yes, my nativity is up. There's a few other things because they just released Jack Skellington with the fountain. Funko
Ooh.
Pop, yeah. So I was,
why don't you own that already?
I know, right? So I want to pick that up. I got one of Jack and his house, which is cute.
Oh,
So yeah, I've added some things to the nativity, and I've also been toying with the idea. If you follow us on Instagram at Fright School, and Facebook at Fright School, and Twitter at Fright School. You may have seen, dear listener, the photograph of the annual scary Cryptmas tree. So that went up. It's a white tree with black and silver ornaments that we put up.
But it's so different now, as Joshua has, you know, touched it four different times since I've been here today.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because the more you look at it, the more it's like, oh, I got to balance it. Because it's like, I like it no matter which direction. You know, that's decorating tip, you know, yeah. No matter where you're standing yeah. in a room, it should be interesting. And so because you have a tendency, you know, when you decorate it, you know, you kind of put everything on. And then as you look at it more, it's like, oh, I got to move things around, make it more complex. You know, if I'm standing over here, standing over there, what does it look like? Where does mm-hmm. it look like if you're sitting there or there? So, yeah, just balancing it. But I think it's okay now. I don't think I need to fiddle with it anymore. Let's hope. But
well,
I've been toying.
We'll see.
I've been toying with the idea of getting, somebody sent me a link to a really cool black, mini Christmas tree.
Oh.
And I want to do, red ornaments.
Oh, that'll be
yeah,
great. That'll
so
be
something
delicious.
For, right in the hall when you first walk in the front door, you know, greeted with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh, yeah. I don't know why you haven't done that before. I love your, your exposed, you know, your negative Christmas tree where
yeah.
it's white with black. But I think black tree with red ornaments will be, you know, very, very Father Blackwood, very, you know, Church of Night.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I just want to kind of give it a try and see. But we'll see. I have not ordered it yet, but I did see it because it's like, you know, it's also a mini tree. So finding the right size ornaments for it,
yes,
you know.
True.
I have a Holiday Elvira bobblehead. She's in a beautiful red dress.
Oh,
so I have that at the front. So it'd be kind of neat if I had a tree and then her next to it would be really cute when you walk in, you know?
Yes.
So anyways, but yeah, so we're kind of in full swing of the holidays here. I was sort of, I'm looking forward to the holidays more so this year than usual. Just because it'll just be really nice to wrap myself up with family and friends. Framily.
Your framily.
You know, so I'm looking forward to it more. So every year it's like it just keeps taking on new meaning as I continue to reshape Christmas in my image.
Yes. And I have to say that I do enjoy I do enjoy that, like, you have the holidays, but you celebrate it entirely 100% your own way.
Yeah, got to. Got to.
That's great. I love it. It has inspired me to celebrate it entirely 100% my own way.
Good, you should. Absolutely. So. Everybody should, you know, if you're not. I just don't understand, you know, this, like, urge to make the holidays a miserable experience. You know,
yes.
Like, it's like people, like, with Thanksgiving, you know, it's like a badge of honor to be like, I was miserable all day cooking and cleaning and suffering. You know, it's just like, I've just been to so many horrible holiday functions where it's like, nobody seems happy. So
it's like, we're all here because we are all obligated to be here.
What
if we freed ourselves from the obligation?
Yeah, what if we just had fun? What if it wasn't so complex, you know? So that's, like, the nice thing. It's like,
what if we didn't eat turkey? What if we actually had food that tasted good, you know? Like, we had, like, you know, had a ham or a prime rib.
Yeah, that's what we had. We went up to the Squanches family. His dad made a delicious ham, and it was very nice. The food overall was delish.
See, there you go.
Yeah,
delicious food.
The day after, I made some delicious citrus infused Cornish hens.
Oh,
and it was very good. So yeah, Thanksgiving is always. I don't know. It just seems like everybody wants to be miserable or something. Not everybody. But,
yeah,
you know, it's just. I just don't understand at this time of year. It's like, I really want to relax, you know? So that's why it's like, you know, it's like, it's a pajama party for Scary Christmas, you know, just come over. I got tamales, I got hot chocolate, I got tons of store-bought cakes and pies and, you know, and a few homemade things.
Yes.
But the majority, it's just to be lazy and have a good day. And
when will you release the, Scary Christmas viewing schedule?
I've been going back and forth because I don't know what I really want to show this year. So I have a few that I know definitely because I always show, you know, some. But I was kind of looking forward to seeing what else might come out still.
Okay.
You know, that I might throw on. So we'll see. But it'll be out soon. So, and I will, I'll post that to our various feeds if people want to play along at home.
Yes. We'll show you where you can stream it or not, where you can rent it or not.
Yeah.
Christmas this year is going to be interesting because my cousin's kids are a little older this year. So I'm thinking, I'm usually the game master. I'm the one who, like, is in charge of our presents and White Elephant and all that stuff. But since the kids are a little bit older this year, I was thinking about maybe doing something fun with just, like, for them, you know, because the holidays are always about the children. It's really interesting because, like, as I get older, I realize, like, within the last 5 years, I realized that, like, I really don't want people to get me gifts. I want them to give me money and I'll just buy my own shit.
Amen.
You know, I just, like, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I'm fine not receiving, like, gifts from people, or, you know, I don't create wish lists anymore because it's like, I don't really need anything. And I'm perfectly capable of buying the things that I want throughout the year. So I'd rather just have the ability to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can, are you hinting at our Pinecast tip jar? No.
Yes, actually, if you want to set, you know, Joshua and I have, like, we have some travel coming up, so put some money in our jar.
Oh my gosh, yes, for the holidays. Thank you.
Yeah, we would appreciate that. You know,
my birthday is also in December, so you can throw a dollar in there and we can, you know.
Throw some coins at us.
Yes. I'm excited for that. That's coming up soon. So we'll start. We'll start talking about that soon, about what we're doing in the new year.
Yes,
it's gonna be an exciting.
Wait,
year. It's gonna be another fun freight school filled year. Let's see what else has been happening.
I did see Knives Out.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
How
was it? Very nice.
I really want to see that.
Very good.
I just love Toni Collette.
It's a very interesting take on the murder mystery film.
Cool.
Which you don't quite see it coming when they reveal it to you.
Oh, cool. I like that. If I'm not like, I know who it is, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, it's very interesting. And, you know, Captain Von Trapp is still, you know, very much alive, and he's very vibrant in this film. And
cool.
Toni Collette is just a riot.
Is she in it a lot?
She's not in it a lot, but when she is, she's there. Same thing with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really good. I mean, Daniel Craig as like this Southern fried detective is also good. And Lakeith Stanfield is playing the same character Lakeith Stanfield plays in every film.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it. The promotional stuff has been really fun, you know. So I'm excited to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have so much like catching up to do on movies, you know. It's like we do live in this time with all the streaming, and you know, I have the Netflix and the Hulu and the Amazon Prime and now the Disney Plus and the WoW Presents Plus, and I had DC Universe, but I'm canceling that because I don't need it. And what else? Oh my gosh, so many. I just have so many streaming services that it's just like, I'll just wait for it to come. I'm kind of spoiled on like going to movies, you know.
Yeah.
Which is too bad because the new Star Wars is coming out and I think we might already have tickets.
Oh, well, you know, I might have to figure out when you're going because I definitely want to go to that.
Yeah, it's either the Saturday or Sunday after it premieres.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we're not doing like the Thursday night, Wednesday, whatever it is, you know, midnight premiere that people are going to. Some of our friends are doing that, but I think we'll go out that weekend.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So that's coming. So that definitely I'm going to see. And Cats.
Ah, yes.
I'm definitely going to go see Cats. And I'm forcing Jeffrey to go. If I have to go see Star Wars, he has to go see Cats.
Yes.
I will say this, and I kind of want to, put this. I keep thinking I wanted to write like a post about this or something, but I'm very concerned, much like with the Lion King trailers, the live action and major quotes, Lion King, that they didn't play a lot of the music or feature a lot of like singing in the trailers.
Oh.
And Cats, it's kind of the same. They only show Jennifer...
Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson singing like, Memory, which we knew we know she can sing. You know, we saw Dreamgirls.
Yeah, she got an Oscar for singing.
You know, we know she can sing, and Memory, obviously, she sounds beautiful, perfect. But the fact that they haven't been giving a lot of other of the music, you know, has me worried. You know, because it's the same thing. That's what happened with The Lion King. That's why I didn't go see it, because they put the soundtrack out and I listened to it, and I'm like, ooh.
Mm-hmm. Boring. I do like some of the songs on Beyonce's Lion King The Gift.
Oh. Like a companion album?
A companion album. Same thing that I think what Kendrick did with Black Panther, because she featured a lot of artists from Africa. And
oh, interesting.
Yeah. Like I'll have to let you listen to some stuff.
Yeah. That would be cool. But regardless, I'm a little nervous because I've not heard enough of the singing from it. And that's, that's concerning.
Heavily auto-tuned.
Yeah. You know? Well, especially with like, you know, well, I don't know. I mean, James Corden can sing.
Yes.
You know.
Judi Dench can sing.
Judi Dench can sing. I mean, there's a lot of people in this
Idris
that can't
Elba
sing.
Maybe can sing.
Yeah,
I
we don't
he's
know.
He's playing
we'll
McCavity?
I think you might be right. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know who's playing what, really.
Yes. I think they're gender-bending Deuteronomy with...
Yes, that's Judi Dench.
Yes.
It's Deuteronomy. Yeah, that's that you can tell by the trailer. But yeah, we'll see. We're definitely going to see it. So,
okay.
Might bring a flask and a vape pen, just in case.
I mean, that should make for excellent viewing.
Yeah. I just hope that, you know, the songs aren't too... Because that's the thing. Because, like, for a while, they, like, reinvented, like, the Rum Tum Tugger song.
Uh-huh.
You know, and there's other, like, versions. And, you know, when you bring it to, like, a modern audience, it's like, you know, the music's very Andrew Lloyd Webber, very, you know, in that 80s realm of the way musical sounded then. So it's like, I want it to still have that flavor. You know, I don't want it to be too modernized. You know,
we'll see.
Yeah, so we'll see exactly. Some of like the footage, you know, where you're watching, where it's like, I think that's probably this scene, and it definitely looks like it's not like the original score.
No.
But I mean, that's life. Whatever. If it's bad, I'll just go back to that. Remember the 1998 like.
The filmed
version of
Cats.
Exactly. That's fine.
Yeah.
I can live with that.
You
even
live
without Growl Tiger's
and,
Last
you know.
Stand. I can still, exactly.
Yes.
I can always go back and watch that because that was very enjoyable when I was a teenager. So
lovely.
Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Trying to think what else. Oh, I did get, I've been collecting some documentaries for us to watch and review in the coming time.
Oh, so, have you?
Yeah. I just got Memory, The Origins of Alien, which our friend Daniel, who was on
on our double episode.
Yes, talked a little bit about. So I got that. And it was actually really neat because it came with this really cool, I love an enamel pen.
Yeah.
It's like the Xenomorph as H.R. Giger originally, like, it's based on that painting.
Yes, it's kind of
a cool little square.
That is a really cool pin. That's a pin that I would also love to own one day.
Yes, it's really neat. So I picked that up. So I'm looking forward to us watching that, and we'll have to talk a little bit about that again. Maybe have Daniel back on.
My goal is to get an enamel pin from every film that we've watched.
Oh, well, you'll be very busy.
Yes, I mean, collecting that's like those. Over 70 enamel pins. But yeah.
So I got that. I have another one coming called In Search of Darkness, which is sort of looking at 80s horror films. And the particular version I bought is the Elvira edition. So she's, I think, has segments in it. Not as Elvira, but Cassandra, like, narrating or talking about the different movies in it. Mm-hmm. And then we also have our dear friend.
Our dear friend Kyle.
Kyle, we have his Survival of the Film Freak. So I would like to devote an episode to that. There's a lot of really good documentaries. Obviously, the Scream Queen documentary.
Yes.
With Mark Patton.
Which is making the festival circuit right now.
Yes, we have friends that are working on a queer horror documentary. So that's exciting.
Yes. It's a good time for documentaries.
It is. Yeah, so I think it'd be nice to watch and review a few. That's what I got for, news.
Awesome. That's what I got as well.
I love it. I guess today we're continuing our series on natural horror. Man versus environment, man versus nature.
Is that what you are? A natural horror?
Yes, I am.
You make me feel like a natural horror. You know?
Ooh, let's do that. Let's rewrite a whole bunch of songs to put out a Fright School record, Joe.
How?
No, I'm kidding, because you would actually go home and make that happen.
I would make that happen. We'll get Sam Wyman to come in here, Brennan. Mm. Like, they'll make that fucking shit happen.
Yeah. But they have to be educational songs.
They'll be
a choir of creepy children.
It'll be like Schoolhouse Rock, but it'll be about different.
Fright School Rocks.
Yeah.
Fright School Rock.
The final girl. Well, it'll be a song about the final girl, but it'll be I'm Just a Bill, but it'll be the final girl, doing the,
Yeah. I wish you could see the little dance Joe's doing, dear listener.
We'll put it up on a boomerang when this episode comes out.
Yeah, I dig it. So we're gonna do a little journey into Hitchcock's The Birds right after this.
I just want to apologize. I'm sorry to everyone. I was very naive and very stupid, and I shouldn't have put other people in danger. I am so sorry for everything that has happened, because in spite of what Joshua says, it's now all my fault. I insisted our listeners subscribe to Fright School on Apple Podcasts. I insisted they leave us reviews. I insisted that they give us a 5-star rating. And it's all because of me that we're here now and we're being hunted. I love you, Mom and Dad. I am so sorry. I only wanted to make good content for our listeners. I'm so scared. I'm going to die out here. Joshua, is that you?
Welcome back. Joe, it's recently come to my attention that we are among beards.
Beards.
yes. Listener, we are looking today at the 1963 film directed, produced by Alfred Hitchcock, The Birds, very loosely based on a novella by Daphne du Maurier. Talks all about unexplained bird attacks. Talks about, I don't know why I said that. It's is about.
It is, yes.
Birds attacking a small coastal California town.
Yes.
So, what did you think, Joseph?
Well, I think your education is sufficiently corrupted me, because there were several parts where the birds were attacking people where I was just cracking up laughing.
Yeah, the effects on our, you know, jaded eyes.
Yes. Are, well, I mean, also, you know, our, you know, this like high definition television and these effects are, you know, they're not translating. But I kept thinking like, wow, at the time, this must have been like terrifying to people that all these birds were everywhere. It was good. It was good. Definitely probably won't do a rewatch of it, but it's nice that some have, you know, as ambiance in the background or something.
It's a tad long.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we get it. We don't know why the birds are doing what they're doing, but, you know, it's just, it's interesting how long it just all kind of went on, and before you get any, before you're really doing anything. And there's, the, you know, the MacGuffin of, like, you know, who is she, this woman, this, you know, bored heiress prankster goes, breaks into a one man's home. And
yeah, Melanie Daniels is the character played by Tippi Hedren.
Yes, Tippi Hedren, legendary Tippi Hedren. Legends in this, lots of legends in this.
Yeah, we got Rod Taylor as Mitchell Brenner, the central male of all of this. Jessica Tandy
as Lydia Brenner,
as Lydia, his mother. Suzanne Plachet as Annie Hayworth, his ex-lover. And a very young Veronica Cartwright, who we've seen in Alien and The Witches of Eastwick, and
Jack's mom.
Jack's mom from Will and Grace. Yes, playing young Kathy Brenner, Mitch's sister. Yeah. Legends. Any other legends that you reckon?
Well, I mean, the of course, the cameo with Alfred Hitchcock.
Right at the beginning, walking his dogs. They were his own terriers. Sealham Terriers? I don't know what that is.
So Joshua, before we watched it, in one of the special features of the DVD that he had was...
Yes, I got to revisit our Alfred Hitchcock collection that we watched North by Northwest and Psycho from.
And this particular special feature was the trailer, and it was a very long-winded trailer starring mainly Alfred Hitchcock, but I thought it was very effective, and it had all his sarcasm, and I thought that was a very nice way to start it out and give me a kind of a taste of, I think it gives a good job of giving a taste of what he was going for and why he chose to make the film the way he did.
Yeah. I enjoyed the sarcasm of it. You know, that's like the funny thing about the trailer. So I'm pretty sure it's probably available on YouTube. You can go and look for it. But it's just funny how he talks about, like, you know, the brave bird and like our loving relationship with it. All the time talking about, like, you know.
We put it in cages.
Right, you know? Yeah.
Eat it and...
You know, hunt it for fun.
I think the best one was about the egg, where he was like, you know, man sought to eat it, and then, you know, we figured out a way to alter time so that way they're always laying eggs.
Yeah, trapping them in, like, eternal darkness, laying eggs. Yeah, it's very, very political, you know? Yeah. But I like how he talks about, it's like, oh, you know, I like to stray from controversial subjects.
Yes. No controversial subjects, please.
Yeah, so I did want to show you that because I just, it's very entertaining, you know, just to see him introduce the film and, you know, kind of lay the groundwork so for what's to come.
Well, lovely. Thank you for doing that.
You're so welcome. So, The Birds.
The Birds.
So, obviously, I mean, it's... one of those films sort of on the surface, obviously, it's about, you know, birds attacking a town, you know, very clearly animal versus man, you know, so for this little series that we're doing here.
Yeah.
You know, so you can, I think, you know, read it as a comment on environment, you know, on, again, it's sort of very relevant today. You kind of brought up a few times about how it could be remade. Although I think in some ways it sort of has been, you know, in movies like The Happening or, mm-hmm. you know, where like nature turns against us because we're destroying it.
Yeah, I think you can definitely see how all natural, like a lot of natural horror films are referencing the birds and how, and it's just like, you know, strangers banding together to, you know, basically just be on the run from it. I thought a lot about Jaws, obviously, yeah. you know, a seaside town being beset by a menace. It was also long as well. It was a long and drawn out as well. But yeah, it was, I just kept thinking, I was telling Joshua the whole time, I'm like, yeah, you could remake this. Like, you could remake this and have it be at least, certified fresh, maybe on Rotten Tomatoes. But I definitely think it could be remade into something, to something more interesting and equally as horrifying.
Yeah, I'm sure it could be. I'm surprised it hasn't been remade. I know they tried to do a sequel that, like, bombed, but I don't know, maybe you'd have to do it. I don't know. Is this one of those movies that would have to be sort of like a comedy horror?
Oh, you mean like not intent, like it's a remake, but it's like a very tongue-in-cheek remake?
Maybe. Yeah, I think maybe that could be successful. I just don't know how terrifying birds are. But then again, I mean, this was, not only is it based on a Daphne du Maurier novella, but also, you know, in the early 60s, a bunch of seagulls or some kind of bird, I think it was seagulls, did attack, like invaded a town, mm-hmm. Because they, I guess now we understand, or scientists or whoever studying the case think that they got into some like toxic algae or something that was probably created by sewer runoff. So
pollution.
It like poisoned them, yeah. Made them like, you know, lose it, and so they like attack this town. So maybe at the time it was a little bit more real, you know, because you're watching something that is based on, you know, an event,
a real
that
event
happened.
Yeah.
So finding a way to make them scary, like making birds really scary, I think would be a challenge. You know, not like, you know, spiders or you know, or something like that, where they're already creepy.
Yeah.
To most people.
Yeah. So it's funny you mention that, because the older woman who is, you know, ornithology is her avocation.
Yeah.
She was just like, you know, birds are for the enjoyment of, you know, bring beauty into the world. And I looked over at you and I was like, has she ever met like a hawk or like a bird of prey, raptor, a, you know, like, come on, give me a break with this, you know, pleasure and beauty.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted at the end, you know, not to skip towards the very end, but I kind of wanted the lovebirds to just like escape and kill all of them in the
people in the car.
I thought that was unsatisfying.
It was an odd choice for her to grab them and take them. I didn't know what that was about.
I mean, the whole,
they were calm.
The whole last 10 minutes where it was just like, you know, creeping by to make sure to see if they're gonna, like, you know, just getting the car and then getting them in the car was just all really long and drawn out, and I didn't like that. And
yeah, well, and I'm just wondering, like, if that serves a different like purpose of the other meanings that the film might have. But before we dive into that, I wanted to comment on something you were talking about, the remake. Oh, so I do think that the ornithologist or whatever character brings up what is centrally, I guess, scary about the film, mm-hmm. in that there are a lot of animals, and should they decide to rise up against us, like, they probably do have a good...
Oh, yeah, we're fucked.
Like, you know, in some ways, you know. I mean, obviously, we could argue that forever, you know, how much of a threat to like our existence a bunch of wild birds might be.
Yeah.
But I do think that that's something that can be explored, you know, in an interesting way if it was to be remade, you know. But again, it just, in this day and age with the kind of military weapons we have and drones and all that sort of stuff, even that, I don't know, it feels like
how can we make
can
scary?
We get that? Yeah. Can we make it scary? You know, so
birds
I think it would have
being
to be
scary on their own. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So
not
I think
like
we'd
a
have
Sharknado
to find,
or.
Yeah, that's why I think it would have to almost be like a campy meta kind of thing. You know, of if somebody's going to remake this, it would have to have that sort of commentary of like Zombieland.
Yeah.
Or what is that? Isn't there a movie like from the people who did like Shaun of the Dead about like sheep or something? Maybe it wasn't them.
Oh,
but I thought there was
I don't
like
know that.
I don't know. There's like movies that are like a little bit more tongue
maybe
in
like
cheek,
like a Dead Snow.
Maybe yeah, where it can be a little bit funnier. You know, even like Arachnophobia. It's meant to. We haven't watched it yet, but it's coming. Has a dark humor to it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like the film that it's kind of inspired by, Kingdom of the Spiders, does not. It has much more of a bleak sort of ending, you know. Like I was saying when we were watching it, it did kind of remind me of like Night of the Living Dead, you know, from 1960. That, mm-hmm. you know, one of the first films we watched for Fright School. It had like they were trying to make it that kind of terrifying, you know, with them beating at the door and you see their little beaks breaking in, and it's just it has opportunity to be really funny.
Yeah.
You know, and you could play with the horror, I guess, of that, you know.
Also it was just like, oh, it was a lot of oh.
Yeah, everybody freaking out. But I mean, and it did have some disturbing imagery. I think of like Jessica Tandy's character going in,
oh, and seeing the guy
and seeing
the
farmer with his eyes plucked out. Yeah. And they showed that for a bit. And I'm like, wow, for 1963, that's pretty gory.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of blood in this. And seeing, like, the children getting attacked while they're running and they're all, you know, bleeding. It's like, yeah, I imagine being an audience of the 60s, not having experience with, like, special effects on this of this caliber.
Yeah.
You know, which at the time, this was, like, state-of-the-art. You know,
yeah, I think
Disney was involved in helping create some of the special effects. They did a lot of interesting things of like laying, you know, like footage over, you know, film. So it was just very cutting edge for its time. So I do imagine that it kind of would give maybe given people like a fear of birds if you saw this as a kid.
Yeah.
Somebody walk by and see a bunch of birds gathered together like,
Well, so, you know, here's our, you know, episodic story about, folksy story about being from Guam, right? So Guam has like a little to no bird population due to back in the 40s in a, there was an invasive species that came and basically almost wiped out all the birds on Guam.
A snake or something?
Yeah, it was a snake. So, you know, coming here and seeing birds, having not watched the birds, but knowing that that movie exists and what it's about, seeing a lot of birds just kind of freaks me out in general, because I'm just like, oh, well, maybe this is when they start to, maybe this is when they rise up against me, and just not being familiar with it. So there you go. Like, that's me. I don't have a fear of birds, but I do remember getting like freaked out when they're in like in the sky migrating, or, you know, seagulls that are just kind of there. And, you know, thanks to this movie, I'd probably be even more freaked out now. So there we go.
Anytime you see them gathering together. Yeah, we were walking somewhere the other day and there were just tons of like crows, it looked, and they were all swirling in the sky. I'm like, that looks fucking ominous.
Yeah. It's a murder of crows.
Yeah, they call them that for a reason,
yeah,
obviously.
Exactly.
But yeah, I like that the film also doesn't offer much of an explanation. You know, it's like the birds lose their fucking shit. They're tired of people, you know? Tired of their fucking boats in the water, tired of their fucking houses standing in the way. They're
tired of being people's pets.
Their glass windows that they're running into. They're just sick of it.
Like fishing their fish.
Sick of these apes and their bullshit.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, come and take over. Like, hey, we don't need this shit. And it's interesting because it sort of, you know, creates the reverse, like, you know, where the birds in the beginning, you know, they're all in cages and it's all about, you know, keeping a pet bird and, you know, the chickens that she, you know, the mother is involved with at the farm. And, you know, and then by the end, the birds have created the situation where people can't leave their houses. You know, they're all trapped, you know, in their own cages.
Yeah.
I like
the parallel.
The imagery of that. You know, especially at the end when they're driving away and you just see thousands and thousands of these birds all just hanging out.
And they're not like beautiful. You know, they're like the...
No, they're pelicans.
Pelicans and crows and seagulls.
Sparrows.
Because like what's the ones that are in
or
the...
Or seagulls, not pelicans, seagulls.
The ones that are in the shop that in San Francisco are all like these beautiful parakeets and canaries and things.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing, the lovebirds, you know. So that was another, it was kind of interesting, one of the things in, when I was researching, you know, some analysis of the birds, is there was a study. So the Daphne du Maurier book has this reading where it's sort of about... like communism and the Cold War.
That's interesting.
You know, so it's like this political allegory about the psychological violence of capitalism and the fear-mongering of the Cold War. This is from What is Hitchcock's The Birds Really About by Megan Burbidge for The Medium. This came out, this was written published September 25th, 2017. So it's kind of looking at the novella where it's about a farming family who are living in a remote part of Cornwall, and they're suffering these relentless attacks by flocks of birds, so dedicated that they kill themselves in this pursuit, which is kind of seen in the film early on when Melanie and the girlfriend.
Oh yes. The
Anne
Hayworth.
And yeah. I know. Yeah, Hayworth. I keep thinking Hayworth. When the seagull flies into the door and kills itself. Anyway, so there's this whole thing about the film being this, or the book, the original book being a comment on the Cold War, and that the birds representing this like Soviet Union influence, communist paranoia, because there's a lot of repeated reference to the East Wind, and the Arctic Circle is mentioned several times, which is... the Arctic Circle alludes to the fear of the domino theory, the idea that communist victories will trigger revolutions in other countries. So there's this whole reading of the book with this sort of communist witch hunt, you know, coming out of like the McCarthy era. And then also the rising up of the oppressed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have, like, in what you're talking about, like, the birds in the gilded cages, they're kept as pets, they're, you know, treated nicely by the humans, they're not eaten, you know,
they're
not shot for
at.
Fun, they're there to be pretty, you know, so they kind of represent this more wealthy class. And so what rises up are the wild birds.
Yes.
But what kind of gets lost then in that translation is that they don't really attack the wealthy, or, you know, they just kind of, they're attacking everybody, and the children get it, which, I mean, I guess it does sort of make sense, but it's just the reading of it. It's not like this is some ritzy, fancy coastal town.
No, you know? it's a pretty working class
town.
Yeah,
it seems like a lot of the people there are just kind of getting by, you know, probably tourism and whatnot. Kind of like the Jaws beach in a way.
Yes, very much.
But yeah, so there's this whole like analysis of Marxism and all this stuff in the novel that doesn't really exactly translate, you know, to the film. Again, I mean, the environmentalism of it, you know, the allegory for that is obviously clear, you know, with the birds.
Yeah,
I feel that's a little on the nose, like for the analysis. But I thought it was really interesting in reading research for this and the book, because basically, you know, Hitchcock had heard about, you know, what happened. I guess he had read the Daphne du Maurier's short story, because it is part of a collected works of Alfred Hitchcock Presents novels that came out. I have a couple. So he was influenced by it, but it was basically, I like this idea of the birds attacking people, but let's just kind of rewrite the whole thing. So it's not, you know, du Maurier, I think, was very unhappy with sort of how it came out, because it bared little resemblance to
what,
the work.
What they actually were.
Yeah. So the other interesting thing about the film... Oh. Hemlock.
Yeah.
He's so bad.
Hemlock's going to
come
back.
Come
I'm just
going to
leave the door open. About the birds?
Yeah, so the birds, sorry, got distracted by Hemlock, is this reading of it. So I found this article, The Freudian Interpretation of the Birds, by Jeff Saporito, December 11, 2015. This is for The Take. And so it's kind of analyzing, so in Alfred Hitchcock's work in general, so North by Northwest, which you and I saw, the main character, the whole reason he gets wrapped up in the thing is he's mistaken for somebody else when he was simply trying to make a call to his mother, who he has a close, unique relationship with. And then...
played by Cary Grant,
yeah,
who,
so that,
you know, has been outed by Betty White.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so...
I forgot about that. Oh, Betty. So that was 59. Then 60, he did Psycho, which is clearly very, you know, a boy and his mom.
Yes.
You can go back and
you
listen,
can
to that,
and listen to that.
To our episode all devoted to Psycho. But again, looking at the complex relationship between son and daughter, or son and mother. And then to the birds, also kind of has this, the main character has a close relationship with his mother. He calls her dear and darling throughout it. She's like the woman in his life, which she likes to be. And so she is like scaring off the other women who come around.
Yeah.
So there's this reading of the film that it's, I just think it's like a Freudian, like Oedipal complex.
That's very interesting because that's a very clear theme of the three. Of those three films specifically, yeah.
Yeah, it's just something that Hitchcock liked to explore, you know, the again, the monstrous feminine,
yeah.
You know, to some extent, because when you read the film this way, it's called The Birds, which obviously bird is a term
yeah.
for women.
For women.
I would say probably derogatory.
Yeah, pejorative, you know? of sorts.
Pejorative, especially in this context. So you have Melanie, which I pointed out, you know, she's blonde with her green dress, kind of reminds you a little bit of a pretty little parakeet that you keep in your, in a gilded cage. He makes that reference early on.
Only for enjoyment, only for...
Yeah.
Only for, because they look pretty.
Yeah, and she's kind of shown, she's a prankster and, you know, socialite, kind of bored or whatever with her life. So gets sort of wrapped up in coming to this town and meeting his girlfriend and meeting the mother. And so there's this connection that, you know, and it's in the movie with the woman at late in the film where she blames Melanie. She's like, this didn't start until you got here.
You're evil.
So reading this idea that each woman, including Kathy, so we also pull in his little sister as well. So all these different women... they all flock around Mitch until the powerfully sexy Melanie shows up and, like an object being tossed into a flock of birds, causes them to disperse. Angry and frustrated by Melanie's presence, the physical bird attacks are the manifestation of this, like, collective rage.
Dear.
Yeah. So, it's a very unique perspective. So The Birds depicts, this is from Columbia College, The Birds depicts the kind of everyday reality which, from Freud's perspective, a person suffering from mental pathology experiences. It is filled with dangerous, fatal things and gives rise to hysteria, anxiety, and paranoia. But why exactly they are dangerous and fatal is not consciously known. So with, like, The Birds. I know, he's such a jerk.
He just loves to come in and out.
Yeah, that's the thing. They just want to be invited in over and over again. But so one can see this theory hold merit. So the first attack in The Birds comes after Melanie comes to drop off the lovebirds. So creating that, solidifying that she's going to continue to pursue Mitch, you know, by dropping these birds off for his sister. And it attacks, the seagull attacks her at that point. And then when they converge, when she and Annie get together and the seagull attacks the house, and then when they all three of all four of the main women in his life all converge at the birthday party, that's when they all really swoop in and this whole insurgency bird starts. I just found that and thought that was sort of an interesting study of the birds. a way to look at it. This anti-feminist psychoanalysis is what comes up in the other article, back to the Medium article. So Hitchcock's films have the recurring theme of neurotic and controlling matriarchs. Hitchcock's mother is like the Wizard of Oz. Remove the mask and you have a woman grappling with her own demons.
Which is very apparent in when Lydia is speaking to Melanie and telling her, you know, what after she gets attacked and after she sees the farmer with his eyes gouged out and sitting in the bed. So interesting, because he's, you know, it's also stems from like the still having not completely recovered from the death of her husband too.
Yeah, it's also interesting because as like the film goes on, if my problem with like this sort of reading of it, I mean, I think it's interesting. Again, you know, we're thinking about Hitchcock's own Weinsteinian behaviors with women. Tippi Hedren, obviously, is a good one. They've made movies about their relationship, and you know, books and things have been written and things have been said. You know, so he obviously, there are some complexities around how he views women. But so if this film was about like, you know, the birds are this like manifestation of feminine rage at, you know, to protect this one guy from outside, you know, they're friendly, you know, like Lydia and her start to become friendly, Melanie and the mother, and Annie and Melanie also are kind of, you know, become friendly, and that doesn't cause the birds to disperse.
Yeah.
You know, so, but then, you know, maybe it's just because it's all underneath, you know, it's just
gently,
they're being
gently,
nice, but they all hate each other
gently
still,
under the surface,
continuing to conjure the birds. I found something interesting. You've heard of Camille Paglia?
I have not. No.
So she's a big time feminist theorist. She's written lots of stuff. She wrote an entire monograph on the birds. And she's like big fan of Hitchcock, which I thought was kind of interesting. But then I remembered that Camille Paglia has some controversial views. You can read the Wikipedia for that. Interesting thoughts on child pornography, for instance. So not that we can necessarily say that she's this feminist, you know, she's a feminist, but what do I want to say? Her defense of Hitchcock and her like dismissiveness around the accusations is interesting to to read.
It's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it is. But she wrote like a whole monograph about the birds, just analyzing like every scene, and she gets really into detail. Like there's this scene. I haven't read the book. I kind of want to, just because in reading through some of the research, it kind of came up a few times as work cited for people. So I'm like, man, I should read it because it sounds very interesting. But she like, there's like a split second scene where you can see like an album of Tristan and Isolde like in the background, and she makes some big thing about the significance of that. So I just think it's kind of interesting that she wrote this whole thing. But she also proposes that the timing of the attacks of the birds correlate with female anger. Just, you know, each one when they first show up, you know, when she first shows up to the town, and then, you know, when she has the overnight, and then the birthday party, and then going on and on and on, you know, that she's, the birds are telling her she's not a welcome guest. So I thought it was interesting that she had written about this.
Interesting that, you know, if you want to do the birds, the bird attacks as just a metaphor for female anger overall, then you can, through that lens, it makes the final scenes very interesting, because here he is, you know, this man, Mitch, trying to get to the car to listen to the radio, get everybody evacuated, tiptoeing around the birds that surround him. So, you know, it's there under the surface. It could erupt at any moment. The volatile feminine, if you will.
Yeah.
And then never really quite knowing when she is going to blow up, aka the birds are going to descend and start their harm. And then is able to navigate that minefield. I mean, it's a little misogynistic because it assumes through that lens, it assumes that, you know, all women are just these super emotional creatures governed by, you know, violence.
Yeah.
But I mean, through that lens, that's kind of how you can, if I was to write, you know, something on it, I could say, that would be one of the ways I guess I could interpret that final scene.
Yeah, well, him walking like among the birds and being really mm-hmm. largely left alone, you know, like a few of them peck at him, you know, but mostly he remains safe. Like they don't surround him and kill him. It's sort of interesting. It does, again, it gives a little bit of the credence to this idea that these three, four women, I keep forgetting Kathy.
Yeah.
Are somehow manifesting this.
The attacks.
Yes. I was looking for like event or something, a different word, but yes, exactly. Just because when he comes out, you know, they leave him alone largely. I just thought, you know, I mean, it's sort of an interesting choice, you know, when it's like there was a good opportunity there to do another really fun bird attack scene.
Maybe in the remake, we make it so that way the birds only attack men.
Yeah, there we go. And the women are fine. Yes, because poor Tippi Hedren, she was all cut up, you know. And I guess that happened in real life. Well, and that's the thing with, like, Hitchcock, again, much like when we discuss The Art of Monstrous Men. Rumor has it he had a thing for Tippi Hedren. Hedren, I keep saying her name wrong. And she obviously was like, no thanks. And so
and then Shelley Duvall'd her.
Basically.
Yeah.
Like he was so incensed that he just kind of made her miserable. I guess she had like a breakdown on the set, especially the scene in the end where the birds are all coming. Because she was told, I guess, that they were going to be mechanical birds. But instead, for like 5 days shooting it took to do that, they were like throwing real birds at her with their mouths banded shut. And so one, like, caught her in the cheek close to her eye, and she just, like, freaked out and melted down. And Hitchcock didn't want to stop production, but I guess the on-site doctor was like, okay, well, you can either stop or you can kill this woman.
Yeah.
Those are the choices. So she had to have a little break from that. So it does, and I think in another scene, some broken glass cut her. So she just had, like, you know, it started out as a great experience, but then went really miserable really fast. It was like a 75-day shoot, which is a lot. Yeah.
That's a long shoot.
Yeah. But she did go on to star in his next movie, or start in another movie, Marnie, for him. So she obviously, for whatever happened, I mean, she did continue to work with him.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. I don't know what that says other than, you know, girl wanted a paycheck.
Yeah, hey.
But I just think, yeah, there's a lot of...
Well, I mean, again, he's the auteur. He's the one, he's the hit maker, so...
Yeah, it's just interesting. Again, it's that, you know, I mean... Well, it's just the same with the Weinstein conversation, and, you know, it's like people want to work and be artists and be, you know, in the business. So how do you navigate
that?
When you have a very powerful... person. So I don't know, watching the movie today, it's like I was thinking about all of that in the back of my head of like, it is a great performance, and I think The Birds as a film is pretty good. Like, still, again, you know, I do think it's overly long, and that's because you're right, it kind of has this beginning where it's sort of misleading you about what it is about. You know, much like Psycho takes a huge chunk of the beginning to focus on Marion Crane when
and
she's
her caper,
not,
and yeah
and she, that's not the movie at all. You find out 5 hours into it. You know, I think it's a great film, and I think her performance is really great, especially for, I think it was her first movie.
Tippi Hedren?
I think it might have been her.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Like, debut. Film. Let me just check that. I thought it was at the beginning introducing She may have done some other acting, but I think that was...
She is, she's one of my favorite parts of that whole film, too. She,
yeah.
She gives this really fun performance.
Yeah, this was her first starring role. She'd been in a film before that, but I think it looks like as a, maybe not the star, but regardless, you know, for being, you know, our first, like, starring role, she's really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Know?
Especially when she kind of, when she's introduced, you kind of think of her as being just this vapid sort of character, but she's much more interesting than that. And throughout the film, I mean, she really is. She's trying
it's
to,
revealed more.
Yeah, yeah. She's very heroic in some ways. Oh, in many ways. But yeah, so what else? Do you have any other interpretations?
No, it was a fun movie. I definitely, you know, it kind of played up again. Like I said, it played up that already uneasiness that I have when I see a bunch of birds out. So, yeah. You know, it's, and I don't know. It's that the idea of, like, we don't know why. That's the other thing too.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know why. And you end it not knowing why. There's no random expert there. Like, even in Bird Box, like, when we watched Bird Box, there was, like, some explanation by somehow there was some explanation about it all. But what was going on, that was satisfying enough to that, you know, I was like, okay, well, guess that's what it is.
Yeah.
But with this one, it was just no explanation. And I hate that. Like, that's one of the more unsettling aspects of horror that I don't like, is when you just don't know why. When the violence is indiscriminate and unwarranted in many ways, and you have no reasons or motives.
But that's the question, because going into the birds, you know, if you think of are hunting them for sport and using them for, you know, our own plumage, you know, and hats and coats and, you know, just all the ways that we, you know, benefit from the genocide of birds.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's, I guess, that's the thing. That's sort of the behind it, the
and
explanation, you know. Because that's what he's saying in the intro, you know, of just the crimes committed upon the birds. Mm-hmm. It's enough. They've had it.
Yeah.
Had it.
I will say that I'm pretty sure I'm going to have fried chicken after this, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're just like Alfred then, sitting down to eat that bird in the trailer.
But I will finish it.
Oh, never mind.
No, I will finish it.
All right.
Yeah, there we go.
Closing statement. I'm going to eat fried chicken and not worry about the consequences if God happens to be a giant chicken.
If God was a giant chicken, that's a cruel joke on chickens.
Yeah.
Or is it a cruel joke on us?
We'll see when we get there, I guess. Yeah, I... did you ever have a pet bird?
No.
No. I did when I was a kid. We had a little parakeet, of course, because that's what everybody has. We had a little budgie called Fancy. She was very cute.
Here's your one chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My mother was a big Reba McEntire fan. I think that's why she did end up with that name.
Wow, you are fancy with your parakeet, though.
Yeah, yeah. She was really funny. She was blue. Very, very pretty. Little Fancy. I missed when she died. It was very sad.
Hmm.
Yeah. That was the second pet I lost, because I had a hermit crab that died.
Oh.
Yeah. And then Fancy. We had her, gosh, for a while. She lived a few years. And then just one day we came home and
legs up,
she was on the bottom of her cage.
Oh. Mm,
so sad. It was very, very sad. Mm. I remember crying. I remember running to my best friend's house. She lived a few houses down. I was so upset. I would love to have a pet bird now, but Jeffrey doesn't like them. So,
well, you know,
yeah. Cause I do. I do really like birds. And you know, when I see people that have like a pet, like raven or a crow or whatever, you know what I mean? They talk. Oh, that's so cool. Like, I just want a little bird hopping around here, talking, yelling at the cats.
Yeah. Oh, no. That would be terrible.
Right.
It'd be beautiful, but terrible.
What if it, like, rid on the back of Hemlock? If he just galloped around and the bird just sat there, just, you know.
On a special saddle perch that we have for it.
Hi-ho, Silva.
I love it.
Yeah. I remember seeing this movie when I was a kid. Really young, so it was fun to revisit it today with you, Joe, as we do on the show. Yeah, I don't know where I fall. I prefer to just, I think the analysis of just, yeah, they're just rising up against us, I think is the most satisfying, you know, only because it's like, what, are they witches? Like these women whose rage is bringing about a bird attack? I don't know. Hmm. It's like, if that's not part of the story, I don't really see the same, that I feel that reading might be a little bit more of a stretch.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy reading about it. It made me, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then when I was watching the film, I was kind of thinking about those things, you know, especially because there was pointed out, I think we talked a little bit about like Tippi's blonde hair and her green dress.
Yeah.
You know, looking sort of like a bird. Yeah. And, you know, the ex with her bright red, and then the mother kind of that grayish, you know, vulture-esque, you know, just overseeing. And,
yeah.
You know, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, I thought that was kind of a, you know, that may have been deliberate. You know, maybe it is about, you know, the women's relationships with this man. But I don't know. I like, in these movies, these natural horror films, I just like when it's simply about, we're getting what's coming to us, you know? We're poisoning the sea, and the birds are eating the plankton or whatever the hell, the algae, and it's making them crazy.
And there we are.
And, you know, direct consequences. but all right. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. Another Hitchcock film under our belts.
I know. We're making our way through them.
Yeah, there's a couple more that I'd like to watch as we continue on, but we'll explore those later. So, all right. Anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, Joe.
Like, rate, and subscribe.
Right. As always, follow us on Instagram. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. At Fright School. At Fright School. At Fright School.
Yes. We're at Fright School everywhere.
All right. Well, join the flock. The Fright School flock. All right. Good night, Joe.
Good night, Joshua. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
Ha 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 ha